Schreider. Welcome back, everybody. Today's on Portal Paranormal Talk Radio, and today's guest that we have is Dave Schreider, and I'm Tuesday Miles.
And hello, I'm Angela Thomas.
I almost forgot to introduce who I was.
How are you today, Tuesday?
I'm fine. It's been a crazy day, so I could say I'm pretty fine after that.
Well, good.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine and very excited to have Dave Schreider on of Darkness Radio.
If he has no N, so it's Schreider. I know it's Schreider. Isn't that? Let's bring him on in. Dave?
Yes.
It's Schreider, isn't it?
Schreider. Schreider.
Okay, see,
Schneider.
I knew it was good.
Schlitzer, whatever you want to call me, it's fine. Darkness Radio Dave, that's easier.
That's right. Darkness Radio Dave. Dave is from Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Right, Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show, yep.
I like that name. Where did you come up with that name?
I'm a Bruce Springsteen fan.
Are you really? He just played in concert here last weekend.
Yeah, actually, I just saw him on Friday night here in Minnesota. But, yeah, I'm a huge fan. And when we were going to do a show, I just thought that was kind of a fitting name since Darkness on the Edge of Town is kind of what we're talking about. It's all that stuff that's just outside of view, just outside of what we're used to. You know, it seems like there's always that one spot in town where there's the haunted house or the, you know, crazy cat lady or whatever you've got, and that's kind of what we talk about on the show, everything.
That's true, and I have listened to your show. In fact, I do try to get into your show, you know, every week. I've tuned in for the last couple months, and I really do enjoy it. I really, you know, I think that you bring a lot to the shows as far as paranormal, you know, information goes on it. So tell us, why do the radio show about paranormal? I know that I've read on your website, and that, again, let me just give that real quick. It's for darknessradio.com. You can find the information more about Dave, and I'll give you the MySpace one out in a minute. But why the radio?
Well, you know, we had college radio together, Tim, my co-host, and I. We did college radio back in 1988, 89, 90, and 91.
Tim Dennis.
That's right. And, you know, after college, we kind of went our separate ways in the business realm. He went off to do radio work, and I went off into the world of sales. And as fate would have it, 2 years ago, the radio station he was working for was looking for some new, unique programming. And we decided, what if we brought a paranormal show to the site? I've got an active interest in it and had become friends with the guys from the Ghost Hunters and a few of the other major speakers out in the paranormal field.
Mm-hmm.
So Kim and I discussed it, and just it was so fascinating, and it seemed like the paranormal was just getting ready to break open again. You know, what with the advent of Ghost Hunters and Most Haunted and the, you know, Ghost Whisperer and Medium and all these different shows hitting the airwaves, so we wanted to give it a shot and see what we could do. And that's pretty much how it got started. The radio station was a little reluctant at first. They were kind of a middle of the road, you know, everything from Sinatra to Barry Manilow. But they were willing to give us a shot on late night Sundays.
Right.
Yeah, and then after we did our first month and we were getting a ton of listeners, they decided to expand us to a two-hour format, and we stayed on that station, AM 1470, for about a year, a little over a year, and then they flipped formats to urban gospel. So we went off the official airwaves and just stuck with the streaming, which we have a much bigger listening audience. You know, we get emails from people that listen to us from Australia, Tokyo, Germany, Denmark. So it's, you know, it's kind of a neat deal to hear from people all over the world that are into the paranormal.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, really.
So that's kind of how we got started with it, and we've been going. This January 1st will be 2 years it will be officially on the air.
For 2 years now on it. Well, I have noticed the guests that you have in there. You have quite a lineup with the guests that you have to your show. Let me ask you this question, Dave. Do you feel that your beliefs in the paranormal change when you have interviewed some of your guests, or that your guests have actually influenced your beliefs?
Oh, sure. You know, I pick up things that make sense to me from each one of my guests. You know, things that make sense to me, some things that I don't understand at all, that they shed a little light on. You know, you guys do your show. You work in the realm of the paranormal. There's also the people that come off sounding like complete kooks. But,
yeah.
You know, you take from it what you can. You try to understand and wrap your head around this. It's such an unknown field, and things are so insane with what goes on in the world of the paranormal, from ghosts to UFO to cryptozoology to places like the Bermuda Triangle. you know, I love to eat it up and absorb it like a sponge and learn as much as I possibly can.
I agree on that. Angela?
Well, certainly I agree with you there, and I believe that, you know, our show, as well as yours, Dave, certainly has, you know, launched us into what I would consider the frontier of paranormal. And I'm very happy to see guests that are coming out with books and even ghost hunting events. And by the way, I love your website.
Oh, thank you.
With all of the different events going on with ghost hunting and paranormal information. But I do believe it's important for us in this field to bring out what is actually being done on a more expertise line versus, you know, maybe just a theory. So, you know, congratulations on your success there.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun. You know, it started off just as a way for Tim and I to kind of get back together working on the radio and talk about something that we were both interested in. And, you know, it's developed into so much more, being able to speak with all of these wonderful, you know, presenters from all over the world, you know, from Wayne Herschel in South Africa, who talks to us about the hidden records and the possibility that we are not from this planet and we are coming from someplace out by Pleiades, to, you know, the actor Dan Aykroyd we had on our show as well, talking about UFOs and ghost stories. And, you know, we've really had a great time doing this. And then the icing on the cake is meeting all of the listeners and the fans of the paranormal that are out there and doing our live events, you know, where we get an opportunity with our guests, you know, like Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters, Chris Fleming from Dead Famous, Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence, and then a plethora of fantastic speakers, everybody from Rosemary Ellen Guiley, the famed and acclaimed author, to demonologists John Zaffis and Adam Bly, you know, and we get to go to some of the most beautiful and haunted places, or reportedly haunted places, in the United States. We've been out to the Queen Mary in Long Beach, California, the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, the Eastern State Penitentiary out in Philadelphia, Waverly Hills in Louisville, Kentucky, which was just the Halloween special of the Ghost Hunters was filmed there. We're going to Rolling Hills this coming weekend in East Bethany, New York. The following weekend, we're back to the Stanley. We're doing a small event at the Palmer House Hotel in Minneapolis, or Minnesota area, I should say, in January, going back out to Eastern State in May. We're working on some other ones, and we're working on a couple of overseas excursions as well. But it's been the fun of hanging out with all these guests and fans and learning their stories and hearing and sharing. That's just been really amazing to Tim and I. That's what really kind of keeps us going in the field.
Right. Well, you know, we all, you know, with the documentation that's been out there, though, Dave, the fact is that we've gotten somewhere as far as proving, you know, the existence of the afterlife, the existence of ghosts and spirits. But the fact is that what I'm looking for still is more information, more documentation that these investigation groups are going to start putting out there. It seems that they go to these places that are haunted, they get their film, they get their, you know, their pictures, maybe their EVPs, but they're not documenting the initial investigation, their findings on exactly what it is that they're coming across. The fact is that and the new research that they should be doing with this. And I don't understand. Have you seen this too? Also, where we're not seeing this, you know, this written up. It's going to the Hollywood aspect of it and not the actual scientific documentation of it.
Well, I think the problem is, you know, with as great as shows and entertaining as shows have been, like, you know, Dead Famous, Haunting Evidence, Most Haunted, you know, Ghost Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel. The problem is that now a lot of people just consider themselves ghost hunters because, well, if a couple of plumbers from Rhode Island just had it as a hobby and now they're doing it, then anybody can do it. And what they're forgetting is, you know, like with Michael Jordan, they watch the guy fly across the courts and do amazing stunts, but they don't realize that how many years went into it before he became the Michael Jordan we know. And a lot of people haven't paid their dues in the paranormal field. They're out for a quick fix and a thrill and just want to get, you know, a good spook and a good scare on, and then that's all they're really focused on.
Right, and it's not just all about that. It's not just about the good thrill, the good scare, and it's not just about the good picture, the good EVP that they're getting out of it. The fact is that, you know, I mean, and not all of them, but some of these, you know, I mean, once we're human, as we were, and the fact is that helping these spirits or these ghosts move on to maybe a better place. I don't know if this is it. Do you feel this is it, Dave? Is this just as far as we get on the other side? Is Earth's level?
You know, I don't know. That's what keeps me going. I've got an overwhelming, terrifying fear of death, and I have since I was a child. I mean, since I was little, I can remember just laying awake at night afraid of death because I didn't know if there was some place to go after this. Did I just, was I laying in a box and aware of it for eternity? Was I, you know, roasting in hell because I thought dirty thoughts in church? Was I, you know, I don't know what was going on or what will come from it. You know, and it seems like you think you're going to research this and get answers. And, you know, I find myself scratching my head more often than not now that the more I thought I knew, the less I actually know. And I've been working on trying to understand more of the paranormal. You asked me if the guests swayed my opinion. Doing the paranormal investigations has swayed my opinion more on the paranormal. And I question more of what we experience as maybe not being disembodied spirits of ghosts of dead people, but maybe alternate reality versions of ourselves or you know, parallel universes that just seem to be bleeding through at certain areas that we're picking up sounds from there, you know, and experiences. Because what's funny to me is how many times spirits have been known to look up and they see us and they take off running the other way. Why is that? Could it be that we're looking like the spirit to them and whatever thinly stretched part of space and time we're looking through, they can also see us, and is that what frightens them? You know, they're ghosts. What do they have to be afraid of us for? You know, why would they have to run? You think they just blink their eyes and be gone? You know, I've watched I Dream a Genie and Bewitched. That's how it works, right?
This is true. On the other hand, the fact is that maybe they don't want to be discovered. Maybe the fact is that knowing that we have that ability, that gift, to see them or to expose them, and that they're in an area where they just basically want to be left alone. They don't want to be discovered. They don't want nobody to find out where they're at. They don't want their pictures taken. So if I was feeling that way, I'd kind of scram too, knowing that I see someone coming with a tape recorder and a camera.
Well, here, here's my thought.
You also have to consider that there are spirits out there that do not recognize that they are truly dead. And perhaps when we look at energy-wise, they're really not dead, but they're
right.
In a, you know, another realm. So for those that don't recognize that they're dead, then I am sure with the theory that Dave was speaking about is, you know, that perhaps those spirits see us as spirits.
Well, and I have a really hard time, and I'm not psychic. I don't claim to be, and I know they say everybody's got a little bit in them, and, you know, that may be, but I have a hard time with the whole theory of not knowing you're dead. My guess, if you're roaming around and you're not able to communicate with anybody around you, there's nobody else in that realm with you, and if there is, they may not be acknowledging you either. That would be a pretty big sign to me that, hey, I must not be alive anymore, you know, and I don't know if that's because I've educated myself enough in life to know the difference, but I would assume most of these people, you know, or spirits have a knowledge of it. I think, you know, if it truly is the disembodied spirit of a human, I think it's more along the lines of one that just chose not to go because of, you know, fear of what might come next, fear of retribution, fear of judgment, fear of leaving their family and staying here and then just forgetting how to get back.
Well, you know, and you brought up something there about, you know, a spirit and how would they not know that they're dead. But, you know, spirits are surrounded by other spirits, and so let's just call it a spiritual community. I do believe that some people just feel that, you know, a spirit is isolated and they're in some kind of void. But that is not the case. And, of course, I would like to say I can prove that to you, but unfortunately I can't. I just know that in my own mediumship sessions and psychic sessions that I've come across this sort of thing, that they're never really alone.
Well, it could be, you know, but then again, like I said, if then to me that would seem like they are just in an alternate reality of their own then. Because if they're still able to interact, you know, have we died or have we just transformed and moved to a different, you know, have we taken the elevator up to the lingerie department, you know what I mean? Is that where our next stop is? What are we doing here? You know, I don't know.
Well, we lose the body, we return to energy, but the fact is you can't. You know, the fact is, can you contain energy, and are we, you know, is it limited to the area where you're at? But I agree with Angela, though. I have to say that the fact is, where there's one, there's two, and when there's 10, there's 12. You know, I mean, it never seems to fit that the fact is that if there's one ghost, there's going to be a lot of other ones.
Right.
I do know that there are spirits that, you know, we've talked about it before, being earthbound. And I do believe that there are spirits that are in their own unique situation. In other words, they're not fully able to go forward on the spiritual side, and yet they're not able to participate and do exactly what they need to do on the earth plane. So they're kind of stuck. And in that particular instance, then they are indeed, you know, an isolated case. But very, very interesting. You know, David, I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned the Stanley Hotel. Now, is that not the hotel that The Shining was filmed at?
Well, it was where the TV remake, the miniseries, was filmed there.
I see.
The original one was filmed, I think, in Vermont. And it was Stephen King was bothered. From what I've been told, Stephen King was bothered because he wanted it filmed at the Stanley.
Right.
Because the Stanley is where he came and stayed on, like, the last day of the year that they were open. It was at the Stanley that he had his paranormal experience with Mrs. Wilson in room 217, the old housekeeper, who, you know, he and his wife came in, set their bags in the room, and when they came back, their bags had been unpacked and put away. The bed was turned down, things like that. He had experienced the children in the hall and a couple other frightening things, and that's what spurred him on. You know, what's also interesting is right behind the Stanley is the Pet Cemetery, which was also...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right, yeah, which was, you know, the site of, or the idea for his other book as well. So, you know, there's quite a bit of interesting stuff that comes from all these different, you know, locations that you find out about, and it's really interesting to realize that you're standing in a piece of history when you're looking at, you know, the Stanley Hotel or the Queen Mary, to realize how many people that it carried, the deaths that took place there, the prisoners of war. I mean, it's just insane.
It's history, and it's interesting in itself that the fact is that, and I do feel that, you know, the paranormal investigator teams, they try to bring out the history of the places, and I think that's important as it is, too, to understand that the fact is, or to document exactly who these ghosts or spirits are that are, you know, haunting this certain places and stuff, just to know, you know, and maybe to identify them, and that means to either help them or help us better understand.
So, Dave, now, did you have a unique experience at the Stanley?
You know, I have yet to have a personal experience at the Stanley. I've had, well, I shouldn't say that. We had what was called the Frank's Box at the last event we were there, which is it's a radio scanner. It goes through the different, I can't remember if it's AM or FM frequency, and it keeps randomizing and picking bits and pieces. Supposedly you can have a conversation with the dead or the spirits on the other side.
I believe it's AM. It does that, yeah.
And, you know, I was in the room, and to me it just sounded like a bunch of hoo-ha and static and crackling, and the guy, Chris Moon, that was running the machine was, yes.
I bet you it was Chris Moon. Go ahead.
And you know, being skeptical, I just kind of rolled my eyes and thought, oh, what did I do? I let this goofball in here, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden he looked up at me, and he got this smirk, and he goes, technicians, Dave needs proof that this works. He's doubting it. Can you help him? And there was, you know, in little bits and pieces of words. And then all of a sudden, very clearly, I heard it say, darkness, Dave. Darkness, Dave.
Wow.
And then I, you know, that kind of snapped me to attention. I was like, wow, that's pretty weird. So that was the only experience I had at the Stanley. But listeners and the celebrities have had quite a few experiences while we were there. You know, on the very first trip, Grant was down in the basement in the electrical room of the concert hall. And was in there sitting in a semicircle with about 6-7 other listeners. There was an empty chair next to him. And suddenly the chair flipped itself into the middle of the room in front of 7-8 witnesses. Of course, nobody had a video camera going, but we've got 100 pictures of the chair laying in the middle of the room and some audio of hearing a chair go, and everybody going, whoa, oh my God, you know. You know, but we've had people's hair pulled, butts pinched, you know, doors opening and shut, the table moved in front of a bunch of people. What was really fun with the last event, we really seemed to stir the spirits up. And I had one of the night managers that told me, said, you know, Dave, I've been here for 7 years. I think this whole paranormal stuff is junk. You know, I've never had one experience. I came down the next morning and he goes, well, you almost got a knock on your door at 4:30 this morning. I said, why is that? He goes, well, about 4:00. Your final guest rolled off and went to bed, and I was sitting here working, and all of a sudden I heard the piano start going in the piano room. Well, it's an old room. We're not supposed to be playing with that, so I went in to go ask whoever was messing with it to stop, and I flipped on the light, and there was nobody there. So, you know, I mean, we've had a lot of great experiences like that. We've gotten some excellent EVPs, you know, from the investigations there. And, yeah, I'm certainly interested in learning more about all of the locations we go to. The only place I've had my own personal experience so far was at Waverly Hills.
Now, where is that located?
That's in Louisville, Kentucky.
In Louisville, Kentucky. Well, tell us about it.
Well, it's a former tuberculosis hospital, clinic, if you will, and also a geriatric home, and was shut down, I believe it was like in the 60s, finally they closed it down. Well, it's in disrepair, and Tina and Charlie Mattingly purchased it, and they've tried to keep it up, and, you know, they use it as an attraction now. And I went there, and there's something called the death tunnel, where they used to take the bodies that, you know, I mean, they were, you know, a couple, 60, 70 people a day were dying at this hospital, so they shoot them down the death tunnel into, you know, waiting carts to get them out of there. Well, you know, they say that there's all kinds of weird stuff that goes on in that room, or, you know, in that tunnel. Well, two of the girls that were there, Terry and Rachel Scott, were filming in the tunnel, and they came out, and she said, "Dave, we're getting footsteps in the tunnel." So I said, "Well, let's go check it out." Went down, got about halfway down, and turned off all of our lights and stood there, and sure as heck, you could hear footsteps coming up the concrete stairs towards us. So I waited for about 8 steps, and then I flipped on my flashlight, figuring it had to be up far enough that I could see it, and there was nothing there.
Wow. So were you scared?
No, actually, it wasn't a feeling of, oh, my God, you know. At the end of the night, running the event, I had to go all the way down to the end of the tunnel, make sure there was nobody left, and I brought everybody up. And as I got about halfway, you know, it's echoey in there. You can hear footsteps. And I thought, you know, it was strange because the echo of footsteps was really loud. So I stopped, and the steps continued for about 3 more steps.
I love that. That's one of my favorite things. I just love that kind of stuff. You know, I've worked with Chris Moon also. Chris Moon was over at my house, and as our listeners know, I have a very active house, and he brought his little machine over here. And after, I'd say, almost an hour of that thing playing, it got on my nerves so bad.
Right. Yeah, it gives you headaches.
It just got. But I have to say to you, I actually got mad at him about it, because what we didn't expect is that, because not only have I an active house and a lot inside my house, but a lot on the outside of my house, in the backyards, front yards, throughout the whole neighborhood. And it seemed to draw them all here.
Right.
So whatever that noise was, they were very drawn to it. You know, and then again, it made matters worse, because now not only did I have a houseful, I had like 5 housefuls of ghosts, spirits, whatever you want to call it, in my house.
A normal party going on, huh?
Oh, and then some. Yeah, block party, that was for sure.
That's right.
On it. So, well, you know, that sounds great. Let me move on to this on it. So, you know, and as you touched on this a little bit, but though you said you're not psychic, but don't you feel that, you know, being around those who are gifted, let's go through the psychic bit on it, does it feel like it enhances your perception or your...
No, not at all.
Not at all?
No. And I don't feel, you know, I would say, if anything, I'm an empath, and I don't even like to talk about that too much, but I will notice that while I'm in large crowds or in places like that, that I will, you know, I don't like being in large crowds of people because it affects me. I can feel, you know, I get disoriented, I get nervous, and not just like, oh my God, nerves, I got to talk in front of 200 people, mm-hmm. but nerves of just like I'm picking up everybody else's stuff. I know people that I don't even know will start to tell me their, you know, personal stories, and I'll feel what they're feeling. And it's a very weird and awkward sense, because, you know, I have no emotional tie to these people.
Right.
And I'll feel that. And, you know, it gets, you know, a lot of my friends think when we go out to the bars or hanging out in the large groups, they think I'm, you know, acting all reserved or weird. It's because sometimes it's just such an overload to me of what's going on, and I feel for people that are in the places that people I don't know. It's like I can sense what they're going through, what they're doing. And I could be completely hallucinating it and just making it up in my own mind, but I just know that I've been that way since I was a child, you know, so that's why I try to, you know, I put on the Dave persona and joke around and just try to block out as much of it as I can when I'm at my events. Otherwise,
well, as a child, didn't you have a visitation from a grandmother?
Yeah, actually, when I was between 2 and 3 years old, my grandmother had passed away from cirrhosis of the liver, and I had gone to stay at my grandfather's house. My mom was going to go out on a date that night, and I stayed in my grandmother's room, because except in separate rooms, my grandfather snored like a chainsaw. So,
okay.
My mom came to pick me up in the morning, and I told her that Mimi had come to visit me, and it was, she read me a story, and my mom said, well, no, honey, remember me. You didn't have an ex. I said, yeah, yeah. She said she loves us. She came back to see me. So,
awesome.
I, you know, the thing that was intriguing, though, was that I described pretty much to a T what she was wearing. And she had been buried in a closed casket. The only two people that knew what she was buried in were my aunt and my grandfather. My mom brought the story to my aunt, who kind of freaked out because I described to a T what she had been buried in. Plus, my aunt had been phone called from my grandmother twice after her death.
Wow.
So there was definitely some backup on that. And then, well, geez, my son's going to be 20. I have a 20-year-old this February. And he was born at home with a midwife, and we had all friends and family there surrounding us.
Cool.
And we found out early on in the birthing process that he was breech. Now, I had just had my knee worked on the month before for surgery, so it's still a little wobbly, but they needed me to, you know, we needed gravity to get this baby out quickly. So I stood up with my arms kind of in a goalpost position, and she draped her arms over mine, dropped her weight, and pushed. You know, so that's how we were getting this baby out. And we got into a pretty good rhythm. I'd know when to lock down, and she'd go into the next contraction. She came out of a heavy, heavy contraction, and I relaxed, and then she dropped into another one as I was relaxed, and I began to fall backwards. And I got to about a 90-degree pitch and just stopped. And it felt like somebody had grabbed me strongly underneath my armpits and lifted me back up. You know, of course, watching The Incredible Hulk, I knew that it was just simply my adrenaline kicking in and, you know, my superhuman strength allowing me to help out.
Oh, sure, that's logical.
Dangerous situation. Yeah, well, that made more sense to me than the ghost of my dead grandmother. So, you know, I stood straight back up. Now, the interesting thing is my mom was there. My mom's a nurse, and my aunt was there, and my mom asked if the baby was born healthy. My mom came over to me, and she said, I have to ask you something. How did you, when you were falling back, how did you stand back up? And I said, I don't know. You know, I said, it felt weird. My back cramped. It was almost like somebody grabbed me underneath both armpits and lifted me up. She said, that's what it looked like. And then she said, can I ask you something? Now, did you smell anything strange? And I said, Mom, I was holding my pregnant girlfriend, and, you know, she was giving birth to a baby. I smelled a lot of strange things at that point.
Yeah.
She said, no, no, no. Did you smell some flowers? And I said, yeah, I smelled something musty and flowery. I figured it was somebody knocked over a perfume on the dresser. She said, no, that was your grandmother's perfume. Well, at this time, my aunt's out in the living room sobbing like a baby, and I walked out there and gave her a hug, and she said, I got to ask you something. She goes, how did you stand back up? And I told her the same story, and then she goes, did you smell the flowers? And I said, yeah. And she goes, you know, that was your grandmother's perfume. And
So that
to me was a you know, pretty good sign that something had happened. You know, and of course our children are great because, you know, my son, my second son Nathan, when he was very little and wasn't speaking words really, was sitting in the back seat of my car and was jabbering away at somebody off to his right. And, you know, I could see him in my rearview mirror in the car seat. And he was blah 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 and giggling at something. So I turned and I looked into the rearview mirror and I said, hey buddy, I said, who are you talking to back there? And he stopped and looked straight up at the mirror and said my grandfather's name as clear as day, the nickname that I had for him.
Very cool.
Wow.
Now, coming from a kid who wasn't really speaking.
So did he have any other experiences?
You know, I've never really pushed or asked my kids any of that. I figured if something weird happened, they'd always let me know. But there were plenty of times. I have six kids. There's plenty of times when I'm looking at my babies in their cribs and their eyes drift over my shoulder and they start looking at something behind me and start talking to it and giggling. You know, I have a pretty safe bet that, you know, one of their angels or one of the grandparents might be there visiting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know.
Hey, all things are
possible. I try not to push it because I don't want to, you know, they all know daddy's into ghosts and into the paranormal, but I try to make it seem normal, not paranormal to them, so that there's no fear involved. And also, if you take away the sting, then they're not as interested in dabbling in the stupid stuff and messing with Ouija boards and you know, calling on things they shouldn't be calling on. So, you know, we just try to make it very matter of fact, like, you know, putting up Christmas decorations is just what you do. You know, I mean, that's kind of how we handle things at our house. It's just, oh, that's just daddy's job. You know, he talks about ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot and, you know, and we watch, you know, Pokemon now, Dad. Sure, yeah, you know.
So. Yeah. Let's talk about Unicom.
Oh, sure.
Unicom's a big baby for you. I would call it your baby, isn't it?
Is it something that's
special to you or something that you put a lot into?
Well, you know, UNIFCON is a really cool convention that actually 3 years ago, I attended as a, you know, as a paid guest, and just went. It was where I got to meet Jason and Grant in person the first time. We'd become friends through the email for quite a while, and they invited me out to that, and that's kind of where I got to meet everybody in that October. Because of all the connections I made at that event, 2 months later when the radio show opened, I was able to call upon all those people to do the radio show with me. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, John Zappas, Jason Hawes, those were my first three guests on my shows, you know, my first three shows out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty nice to have those big names attached. And then we had a local author here in Minnesota named Annie Wilder join us. And then it, you know, just kind of took off from there. The second year, because our show had taken off so well, I was asked back to host one of the panel discussions. And it's run, of course, by the great kids out at Penn State Paranormal Research Society, who have a brand new show coming out December 10th on the A&E network called Paranormal State. We just got a chance to review that at the last UNIFCON, and it looks phenomenal. So I would recommend to people, check your schedules, check your calendars, A&E for December 10th. You don't want to miss the premiere of Paranormal State.
Where would that be at, Dave? Is that a television program?
Yeah, it's a brand new television program.
Sorry.
That stars the group that is part of Penn State Paranormal Research Society, you know, headed up by Ryan Buell, Sergi, Elfie Music, a couple of the newer people that they have on their team, and a lot of their counselors and teachers that have helped out as well. They also have the wonderful Mr. Chip Coffee, who's a medium and a sensitive, will be a part of the event. Lorraine Warren is part of the show from time to time. So they've got a lot of really great names involved in it. But, you know, I've become friends with the people that run UNIFCON. It's not my event. I just simply attend like everybody else, and I help out promoting it and hosting. Like this year, we did the Darkness Debate, where we had a great panel of people up there. We had Jason and Grant. We had Chris Fleming, Patrick Burns, Michelle Bellinger, the vampire. We had Tiffany Johnson and Chip Coffee, the mediums, and Professor of Paranormal himself, Mr. Lloyd Auerbach. And we discussed a lot of the different things that are going on in the world of the paranormal, from the pettiness of the infighting between paranormal groups to, you know, is it fair to ask for money for, you know, learning about paranormal or to take money to investigate for the paranormal. So we, you know, we try to cover a bunch of topics, and we always have a really good response with that.
Let's talk about Lorraine Warren. I noticed last year in reading about UNICON that they did a, they honored Ed Warren.
Right.
Have you ever been able to interview Lorraine Warren or meet her?
Yes, actually, I've met Lorraine twice now, and I've had her on my show three times, and we're getting set up to have her back on our show again really soon. So we kind of took a different approach having Lorraine on our show. Of course, everybody recognizes Lorraine Warren as one of the big main names from the original Amityville Horror case.
One of the demonologists, isn't she?
Right, one of the investigators and demonologists on the case. And the thing to forget is that this woman is, a lot of people forget, is that this woman has, you know, investigated the paranormal for over 40 years. And she is more than just the one case that defined her. That was just the most popular and famous case. We've actually, you know, our very first show, we dealt with how she and Ed got together, you know, what are her abilities, and talk to her about that. And we archive all of our shows, too. So if your listeners are ever interested, they can go to darknessradio.com, click on the Listen tab, and there's archives of every one of our past shows for the last 2 years. And certainly, I invite you to listen to the Lorraine Warren shows. Those are great. But she has dipped in and told us stories from different investigations, and we have avoided the Amityville story because it's been done to death. I figure, you know, maybe next year we'll after we have her on a couple more times, we'll dip into her side of the Amityville case and then move past it and never talk about it again.
Yeah, I know on YouTube there is also that she's got some of those some of her videos that, you know, that was that they had videoed during the investigation. And I recall this one little girl who was sitting at a kitchen table trying to do her homework, and the chair kept being slid out from her, and her mom was behind her pushing the chair back in again so this kid could do homework. And, you know, and there stood investigating this and filming this with Lorraine and Ed. And I kept thinking to myself, my God, you know, I mean, at first I felt for this little kid trying to do their homework, you know, and having the chair slid out from him, but still in the sense, too, that, you know, they did investigate some pretty nasty cases. I mean, the fact is that, and if we do ever see these kind of cases come up anymore, you know, I'm hoping that it's calmed down where it seems that we're not getting these, you know, really nasty entities that are causing such havoc and documented proof that there's, you know, that they can cause
right.
that huge amount of I would say, chaos.
Well, I agree.
Are we beating it? Or, I mean, what's the deal here? I mean, you know, I mean, it used to be where there was that kind of activity. Do you see that anymore with anybody?
Oh, sure. Poltergeist-type activity is still huge, you know, and they, you know, I think it will be because, you know, they've helped to prove that it surrounds a lot of the prepubescent women that are, you know, coming into puberty, and it seems to be an energy that they're throwing off, which is really strange, you know. I mean, it's that they believe has a lot to do with paranormal, you know, with poltergeist activity.
Right.
You know, it seems to center around one person in the home, and it's usually somebody that's, you know, a young female. There are cases of it being around young men, but it seems more often than not around young women in the house. And, you know, if you can remove that person and the activity stops, that's usually a good sign that is the catalyst or the agent for what's going on.
Which gives me as a parent the reason that I
feel I should be able to send my daughters away when they hit the teen years for at least 3 or 4
yeah,
years.
Oh, really? Yeah, I know what you feel on that. Oh, I had poltergeist activity in my home, and this is, of course, thank God, many years ago. But I did notice that first there was actual third activity. As my children reached that certain age, both of them actually, because they're only 2 years apart, that's when the activity started. But I was actually thankful for the fact mine only lasted about 6 months, and then it just left on its own. But I felt the fact is that the spirit that was already in the home absorbed this immense amount of energy coming off of my kids, and it seemed like that it just really basically couldn't do anything with that energy except wear itself down, and that's what the chaos was caused from on it. I mean, you know.
Right. Well, it could be that kinetic energy is what feeds them and gives them the strength, you know. A lot of the experts believe that if you go to a bar, some of that smoky haze you see hanging in the air is not just cigarette smoke, but the spirits that once, you know, hung there. If they were an alcoholic in life, that in death they might be hanging there and getting a high off the energy that the people are giving out at the, you know, bars and clubs as well. And that could be why so many people drink themselves so hard, is because they're kind of being pushed by the spirits. I don't know.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so there's that, and they could influence. And, it's, you know, once you're starting to weaken yourself by drinking, it makes it a lot easier to manipulate you. So
that's very true. And I hear a quote there from Peter James. You know, Peter James, and you've had Peter James on your show, and of course, and I hear a quote from him. And like he would say, as in life, as in death, the fact is if you're going to be that way in life, you most likely will be that way in death.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's, you know, Marianne Winkowski, who the show, you know, is one of the consultants for the TV show The Ghost Whisperer, and the show is kind of based on her as well. She has a book out called, I believe it's As in Life, So in Death, and it's about, you know, the fact that a lot of people that, yeah, if you were a jerk in real life, you might be a jerk in, you know, you're probably a jerk over there, too, when you're haunting. So,
we're going to lose that jerkiness before we die, huh?
Well, a lot of people, you know, look at the stories of couples that move to a new home and suddenly they're at each other's throats over everything and fighting and bickering and you know, why? And when they remove themselves from the home, everything seems to go better and they're, you know.
Well, Dave, now let me ask you about the, you know, on your website I noticed that you had quite a bit of events coming up. Do you make those ghost hunting research? Do you have it to where perhaps some of our listeners can participate? Or are there any events in which they can take any type of tours?
Well, if you go to our website at darknessevents.com and check out our website there, we post up all the different events that we have going on. Right now, the only two events I have left open are the Palmer House in Sauk Center, Minnesota. We're going to be doing that with Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence, Chris Fleming from Dead Famous. We're only opening it up for just 80 people to that event, so it's going to be a nice small event, two nights of paranormal investigating, plus evidence review. There's going to be a full day of talks by one by Chris Fleming, one by Patrick Burns. I'll be hosting a talk about kind of a ghost hunting 101, if you will. It's a skeptical approach to investigating and evidence analysis. Tim will be doing one with Patrick on EVP work. Phyllis Galdi, the publisher and writer and paranormal researcher for Fate magazine, will be on hand. Local author Annie Wilder will do a talk and a presentation about her home. You know, we'll have a couple of mediums there as well that will be doing readings. So, you know, we make it available for everybody, newbies and veterans alike. And we do break up the groups for investigations, so we try to keep the newbies together. So if they have questions, concerns, you know, we're right there and we can take care of them during the investigation. And, you know, it's open for anybody that would like to attend. They could just go click on the events, look at the information. If they want to sign up, there's buttons to click on to become a member of the event and pay and do the different events with us.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a bonus. So you're going to be out at the Queen Mary. Is that in December?
Yeah, December 2nd through the 5th, I believe.
Are there still tickets available for that?
No, unfortunately, we're sold out on Rolling Hills, which is this weekend, the Stanley, which is the following weekend, and the Queen Mary, which is in December. However, we are currently working on trying to come up with a new Queen Mary event, which would probably take place around the end of February, and a new Stanley event, which would take place around the end of March. We're trying to get that pinned down. The only problem is that the guys from the Ghost Hunters are back to work filming right after Christmas. So it's going to be a little hard to shake their schedules for you to do that, but that's what they're working on. So hopefully we'll have another couple of events, and then you should see us returning back in November again for the Stanley event next year.
Well, one thing I have noticed, though, Dave, with the Queen Mary is that they have changed some of the venues, though. They have now a nightly band on the weekend.
Right.
I noticed the fact is that it's over more towards where the engine room is, and I really have noticed less activity there. You know, maybe this, the fact is that now Peter James, maybe, you know, not to say he is, but the fact is that, you know, he's residing there. His ashes are there, and they are designing a memorial room for him, a museum room, actually, for him on it. But I have noticed that the Queen Mary seems to have really calmed down as far as the ghost activity there.
Well, yeah, that's why we run our events at the Queen Mary on a Sunday through Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do the investigation on Monday night and Tuesday night, there is no band, there is no concert going on. So while we're there investigating, we're not listening to the drumming rhythm of a band or, you know, dance music. And hopefully, you know, from what I've been told by the other mediums and psychics that have gone there, that the music and all the activity is really irritating the spirits there as well. So they just don't hang out there as much. But they, you know, they seem active during the week. So that's what we're hoping, is that we can still capture them. You know, we had some great activity when we were there last time with Chris Fleming down in the pool. Somebody had given him a little doll, and he called out to Jackie, and a whole room full of people heard her call back.
Wow.
And then as he escorted everybody out of the room for the next batch of you know, people to come through, suddenly there was the sound of a little girl singing London Bridge. And there's quite a few EVPs floating around out there from people that, you know, videotaped and audiotaped it. And a whole group, then a whole next group of people walked in to hear a little girl's voice singing London Bridge is Falling Down. So
was that Jackie singing that?
I don't know. I wasn't there, but I would
have done that with Peter quite a few times.
Yeah, those are the famous stories of Jackie. And, you know, we had about 40 to 50 people that all claimed to hear the same thing. So I would assume it's most likely the resident ghost Jackie.
Absolutely. How can you be a skeptic to that when you have that many people who put the validation in regarding that on it? So, well, I'm looking forward to meeting with you, Dave. I will be down at the Queen Mary during that timing on it, and I actually have some of the people there, some of the people that are attending there. They're all coming out this way towards my neighborhood because the fact is there's so much activity here, and there's a lot of activity not only in my house but throughout the whole neighborhood. So I hope that you'll join them and come out with them.
You bet. You just let me know, and I'll be there.
Cool. Okay, now, also, too, you have a MySpace.
Yes.
What is the ID for that MySpace?
You know, probably is easier to do is if you just go to darknessradio.com, right on the front page there is a link to my MySpace page. And when you join on my MySpace page, we also have a MySpace page for the radio show, which is in my top friends, and for my co-host Tim. And then, of course, you know, we've got the Ghost Hunters and Chris and Patrick and John Oliver and all these other great people that are up there in our top group, and, you know, the guys from the Ghostly Adventures show and everything. So feel free to join up and add them as well. It's easier just to launch right from our main website at darknessradio.com.
Okay, everybody got that? We've got a huge room full of people with a virtual auditorium, so everybody's going on. Yes, we got that. On it.
Okay.
Real quick on this, because we only got about less than 5 minutes left, but I want to ask you, I put you on the spot here for a minute. If you had to name three investigators, TV personnel, whoever it is, who you felt was the most credible or the most knowledgeable about paranormal, who would you name?
Wow.
If I needed somebody that had the most experience that I really need to get some information or some help with,
Well, I would certainly refer you to John Zaffis.
Who is? Is he a demonologist?
He is a demonologist and a paranormal investigator. He's the nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Okay.
John is one of the nicest guys I've ever had the opportunity to know. He's knowledgeable, down to earth, very easy to work with. And Adam Bly, of course, I would recommend as well, who's his protege.
One more.
It's hard to, how do you pinpoint? I think everybody's got really outstanding parts of, I would say for activity and for measurable stuff, somebody that's absolutely blown me away are Mark and Debbie Constantino, who are EVP specialists.
Okay.
If you get a chance, you can check them out. We've had them on the show as well. I just had the great chance to investigate with them out in Virginia City and watch them do real-time EVP. That was unbelievable, the things that we were getting and hearing. Working with them, and they've done nothing but amaze me every time. It kind of depends. But then whenever we're around Chris Fleming and Grant Wilson, they seem to get a lot of activity to happen around them at these events. I think they're all credible. I know I'll get beat up for it. Say, Jay and Grant are friends of mine. They're guys on TV that I think they're very credible with what they do and their knowledge. Do I think that everything I see on the Ghost Hunters is real? No, I think that they're human and fallible and they can make mistakes, and I think they have on a few pieces of evidence, but what paranormal group doesn't? If I see another flipping orb picture, of a dusty attic telling me that that's grandma's spirit, or,
orbs are important, though, Dave. Or people are forgetting about the fact that there is some information about orbs, as common as they are, as boring as they are. In fact, I wrote an article about that. There is information on it, so go ahead, go on.
Well, no, but, when you can reproduce 95% of what orbs are.
Absolutely.
In an area, then it really, it gets to be tiring, and that is the way it is. But, the people, Patrick Burns, Jay and Grant, Steve, Chris Fleming, Bill Murphy, John Zaffis, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Linda Zimmerman, a lot of the people I surround myself with, the reason I surround myself is because I believe them and I believe in what they do.
Are they all involved with TAPS also?
Well, Rosemary Ellen Guiley's written over 30 books covering just about every aspect of the paranormal.
That's,
if there's anything you ever want to research, she's somebody you want to check into. John Zaffis has investigated every aspect of the paranormal, as has Rosemary. Adam Bly has been there. And Adam is also a clinical psychologist and understands how the brain works and can really help you understand what you're doing and is great at the art of investigation, even the guys from UNIFCON, Penn State PRS, Ryan and the team seem very knowledgeable, very intelligent about what they do. There are a lot of screwy people out there in the field, but there isn't just about every field of business that you can imagine out there, I try to surround myself with the people I trust and believe, and a lot of those are the people you'll see at our events. And if I could make a mention, Michael and Marty Perry are two of the most fascinating mediums I've ever seen. Work spirit communication wise, and I would recommend anybody check out their website. It's spirit.
Can we draw? Just one of them draw?
Right, yeah. Spiritart.com. It's spiritart.com. Michael works very much like John Edward, where he makes the connection, and his wife Marty will draw the spirits that she sees that are making themselves known to her. And I saw her do a live presentation, and she drew a picture of my deceased grandfather. And my grandfather and I don't look anything alike, so it's not like she looked at me and drew an old version of me. She drew a spot-on picture that I, even just taking a photograph of it with my cell phone and emailing it over to my mom and my aunt, they were both crying because they saw my grandfather. So, there's something to them. They're very amazing. We're going to be working with them on Queen Mary. There's just some really fascinating people out there.
I believe they're working now with Sid and Trish on Pasadena Paranormal.
Pasadena Paranormal Research, PPRS. I would recommend you contact them. Now, Sid's another guy that I would trust, doing an investigation without a second thought. Fascinating guy, intelligent as all hell, and the group that he's put together is just amazing. So there are a lot of really great resources out there for you, if you're interested in the paranormal.
I agree. I've had Sid out here with his group, and he's got a large group, and he's got, I'll tell you, the equipment that he has.
Right, exactly.
It took him hours to set everything up. hours to set everything up. He's got so much equipment. I mean, told him, I says, if you're going to miss anything, you're not going to, because you've got so much equipment for everything on it. But
right.
I did notice that, and even when I said to them, you know, the more investigators that you bring in here, the scattered all these my ghosts go, because the fact is that they don't know you. And I said, so, you know, and I suggest to investigators, come in with a couple of your crew first, then come back with your full crew.
Right.
Because otherwise they just scatter on it and stuff. So, but, you know, one quick question we've only got, I think, what, three minutes left on here on it, Dave. I noticed that myself, being a psychic medium, that it was very hard for me to get people out here to help. I mean, they figured that because I was the psychic medium that I control all of these psychic or all these ghosts and spirits, and that's not the case. But the fact is that once I mentioned that I was a psychic medium, I was turned away. I wouldn't get the help that I needed.
Well, I think it's unfortunate that if you were really in need of help, somebody turned away from you. You know, I unfortunately didn't do the interview with you. I don't know what was said or what their parameters are for their group to investigate. You know, some people just know, hey, this is way over my head. You know, we're not going to come in because we're not prepared to deal with what you have going on. So that very well could be the fact. It could be the fact that, you know, unfortunately, and you know this in this field, you have a stigmata attached to you that, you know, you're nuts or you're off center or, you know, off balance because you're claim to be able to see and talk to the dead. So a lot of people will automatically dismiss it. And, you know, I mean, honestly, Tuesday, if I had a dime for every, you know, medium and psychic I've met that are, you know, loopier than,
absolutely,
you know, the cuckoo bird, I'd be a rich man. You know, there are very few and far between of you out there that know what you're really doing and can actually communicate with the dead or see them or understand them. So, you know, I think a lot of groups get hesitant because the other thing is, so many people are so set on that it is paranormal activity going on that they're unable to relinquish the fact when they're proven that it is not. That, you know, that's hard enough when you're just going into a regular layman's house who believes they're haunted and they want to believe that it's Grandpa Joe, and you can show them that it's not Grandpa Joe flicking the lights on, it's a squirrel got in and gnawed your wires and we've replaced the wires, now your light doesn't flicker. You know, but now you've got to battle a medium who's telling you, no, they're still here, I can sense them. Sometimes I got to guess for paranormal groups, it's got to be one of those things where, you know, I can go out and try to help somebody that can help them and not have to worry about fighting with the person that, you know, we're not getting any activity. We're not seeing what you're seeing, so we can't verify this, and dealing with the frustration level. But, you know, I know there's also just not a lot of groups out there prepared to do this. Like I said, so many of them joined up because of TV shows and think that they're paranormal investigators because they read some books, watched the TV show Ghost Hunters, and now they're ready to rock and roll. That I think a lot of them might just get intimidated by a call like you calling up and saying, I need help.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's, you know, we've got to go to break here on it. And you know what, Dave? Thanks a lot. You know, we really enjoyed your time spent with here on it.
Great. Well, thank you. And remember, if for your listeners, if they're interested in more, we do our shows every Sunday night, 10 to midnight Central Time. That's 8 to 10 Pacific Time. You can listen to us on darknessradio.com. Check out our events at darknessevents.com.
Absolutely. You can find all the information on the portal website. Thanks, Dave.
Thank
Wonderful,
you.
Dave. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we've got a break.
schedule. Here we go.
Your chance to become
ghosts,
ghost hunting, spirits,
miracles,
mediumship, the strange, and paranormal research. What's your host?
You there, too?
I'm here.
Okay.
Welcome back. Thanks for sticking around for our second half of the show. And I'm Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
And we have our guest today joining us is James Hatcher. Angela, about James. You know, we've known James a little while. James is actually he hangs out on Pal Talk here and there, and his name's under Gray Ghost, and he is in our virtual auditorium with all of our other listeners today. And I have to say that, the experiences that he has shared with me, and I also would say that when I needed information about my own stuff that was going on, I'd always, tend to go looking for him on it, and I could always seem to get reliable information from him.
Well, Tuesday, I've known James for quite a long time now, and I have to confess to you that when I first started to go away from the psychic part of my work and into the paranormal, that it was James Hatcher that I reached out to. And James and I went one-on-one together, and he provided a wealth of information. And one of the biggest things is he said, Angela, this is the proper way in which you want to do a paranormal investigation. And so, James was the director of paranormal research and investigations for the Shiloh Center in St. Augustine, Florida. So James has got a lot of experience in paranormal investigations. So I'm so excited to have him on the show today.
I am too. And on that note, I guess it would be time to bring him in. Hello, James. Are you there?
Oh, yes. Hello. How are
you
this
James.
Evening?
Nice to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here. Always enjoy it.
Well, this article that you wrote, that you had emailed Angela and I, reading through this, and if anybody else would like to read this, you can go on to Portal Talk Radio site, and you'll see on the welcome page a link there to James Hatcher's webpage that we create. And, I urge you to go in and read this because it is quite interesting, the findings and the documentations of the studies that you have done. And, you start off the article with imagination, misfired neurons, schizophrenia, misidentification, all of those four humongous words that have, just a huge amount of information behind each one of them, that you write something about this. What urged you to write this article?
Well, basically, it was a case that I was working on last year. A lady from Tampa, Florida had contacted me, and she was having some enigmas. Basically, what was happening is she had suffered some injuries, some brain injury in a car accident about 3 years prior, and as she healed up and as she got her functions back, her senses and her functions back, she discovered that basically some of her neural pathways had been rerouted, and she was having a lot of what we would consider paranormal experiences, to the point where it was very, very overwhelming to her. Medical doctors could not figure out what was going on with her. Psychiatrists and psychologists could not figure out what was going on with her, so she turned to the only possibility she had left, which was the fact that she may have been having paranormal experiences. I did an extensive study of her for well over a year, and I consulted several leading parapsychologists in the nation, including Dr. Gary Schwartz and Dr. Sally Ryan Feather of the Ryan Center, who were not able to help this. And eventually, working with a very good colleague whom I think you also know, Bill Hind in Liverpool, England.
Of course, yes.
You Erica. Remember Bill. We basically worked this case for another few months and finally basically came to our conclusions that her neural pathways had been rerouted to the point where it was allowing constant flows of psychokinetic information.
Now, James, in your experience when you've done investigations such as the case that you're talking about now, do you find that many people who are experiencing this has had some sort of physical trauma to the body?
That is a study which has never been done, actually. I really had no information or no medical data that I was able to retrieve to either prove or disprove this theory. Now, all my life I have heard this, that neural pathways may be rerouted after an accident of some kind, but I have never been able to find any information to either confirm or deny that.
Neural pathways do reroute themselves, and especially when there's been some sort of brain injury where, you know, to the left hemisphere or the right hemisphere of the brain, generally the opposite will take over for the lack of one of those hemispheres. So, you know, the brain is absolutely an amazing, amazing instrument, not only in the thought, in the emotional process, but just the physical process alone. So it would be very interesting to see someone's research on that. So that's a big hint to our listening audience.
Yes, because
I know that we have many doctors and scientists that tune in to our show, as well as our guests that are coming on. So hopefully somebody will provide information. And if you do have any, if you'll go to portaltalkradio.com and forward that through to us via email, we certainly would appreciate it.
You know, James, just part, I'm reading, I'm, in fact, I've got in front of me your article you wrote. In the very first paragraph, it caught my eye. It was so true, and I think there's going to be a lot of other people. And just to quote you real fast, you say, "We all have had a good chance of experiencing something that is totally beyond our realm of experience and rationalization. When we have such an experience, our first instinct is to try to rationalize it and compare it with previous experiences that have similar to the ones that just occurred." Isn't that so true?
Yes, it is. And the reason we do that is it's basically part of our consciousness. We automatically, for survival instincts, we automatically research our brain, we research our memory, we research our learning to see if we can compare this experience with anything that we have formally experienced so that we know how to react to it.
Do you find that fear...
That's a basic survival instinct.
Do you find that fear is one of those that come up first?
Excuse me?
Like, you know, the emotions, the fact is that when we're trying to rationalize this, that the fact is that do we bring fear into this usually?
Yes, fear usually stimulates this. It's, like I said, it's a survival instinct. Like, if you would put yourself back, say, in prehistoric times, when man was simply a hunter or gatherer and worked strictly on his senses and his skills as a hunter for survival. The flight or fight instinct someone put up there. Yes, that's exactly right.
Well, you know, I agree with you there, because I feel that the fact is that, you know, noticing that a lot of psychics, a lot of mediums in that sense, that it's not just about the brain that they're using. It's the sensories. It's the sight, the hearing, the touch, the smell, the taste, the stored memory.
Exactly. And in the little article that I wrote, I later put in there that most psychologists and psychiatrists work on the theory that we operate only off this monoconsciousness theory where we rely simply on instinct and we rely off our memories to basically feed our brain information through the sensory organs.
Wow. Wow.
Now, the dual consciousness theory of psychology allows that these neuron pathways may be fired and stimulated by psychokinetic energy as well.
Absolutely, on that. You know, and then also in here, too, you know, what you talk about is that many of our paranormal or transpersonal experiences are either of spiritual or religious nature. Don't you find that people tend to feel that, oh, it's an angel that's visiting me, that's what this is, or it's my relative visiting me, that's what this is. They try to go to the rational of the whole thing is because the fact is that thinking that it could be something else, that is where my comfort zone stays.
Exactly. They're trying to stay in that comfort zone and within something that they feel they know or are familiar with. And what they're doing basically is staying within their belief system that they don't have to step outside that comfort zone, as you said.
Wow. Angela?
Well, you know, certainly I agree with that it is one's belief system. But let me ask you something, James. On some of your investigations, have you found that most people will hang on to their belief systems, or are they trying to rationalize it as in, I was sleeping, or I was cold, or I was too hot, I was hallucinating? What has been your experience with your one-on-one interviews with those that are being what you would consider haunted by the paranormal?
Well, for the most part, I don't know if you've experienced too many people who have problems with the paranormal, but the most people that I interview are basically at the end of their rope when they come to me. They've mostly eliminated physical causes, and by the time they get around to calling the spiritual center and asking them to have me come out, they're usually pretty well assured that it's something that's paranormal.
Now, at one time, James, you were talking about the difference between a ghost and a spirit. Can you share that with our listeners?
Yes, I'll try to explain that. This is personal with me. I don't expect anybody else to define it the same way, but this is just basically the way that I keep the paranormal experience of a ghost or a spirit, between a ghost and a spirit, separated. Usually I consider residual hauntings, residual energy, residual hauntings, a ghost. Those usually will not interact with you, other than, now they can make sounds, they can sometimes move things, they can make noises happen, and they can appear as apparitions. However, they will not usually, as a general rule, interact with you. If they do interact with you, then you are dealing usually with a spirit.
Right. As far as even looking at you or even noticing you, they just seem to keep continuing doing what they're doing.
Exactly. I mean, they may even look at you and appear to be noticing you, but what they're doing is basically simply doing what they were doing before. To them, you're not there.
And do you feel that they're actually just doing what their memory serves them of their last time on Earth?
Well, they're doing exactly what the scene that the environment soaked up is doing. They're doing the exact same repetition that was going on when the environment more or less recorded this energy.
Do you feel that maybe their memory is trapped? You know, when we say that ghosts don't know that they're dead, or people, you know, people who have died, they don't know they're dead, they're just, you know, it's haunting. Do you feel that maybe their memory is stuck in that time warp?
No, I don't. What I do feel is when we're dealing with a residual, we're simply dealing with energy or energies that have been recorded in the environment.
Okay.
And what is happening there is they're entering our brain, basically through the psychokinetic energy, usually triggered by electromagnetic fields or some other stimulus.
Okay.
That would allow it to be able to be played in our mind. And we're actually seeing or hearing that event or that particular action that took place at that time.
What do you feel, you know, it has been documented, the fact is that, you know, with paranormal investigators go out with these little gadgets, it's the EMF readers, to, you you know, get readings on the electric magnetic field. And the fact is that knowing that it's been proven that with the activity there, that these meters run extremely high, feeling that the fact is that these spirits, ghosts, have actual absorbed the electric magnetic field. What is your thoughts on that? Why they would do this?
Okay, in order to manifest, what's going on there is if we have an energy field, let's say we have a residual energy field present in a place, a building, outside somewhere, and there is an inconsistent electromagnetic field present. In other words, the field doesn't change much until somebody goes there with a lot of batteries, a lot of cameras, a lot of equipment, and starts running a lot of electricity there, and there is no artificial energy except for your batteries or whatever. They're going to use that to enhance the electromagnetic field in order to basically help manifest themselves within your sensitivity.
So what you're saying, though, James, is that you find that this equipment somehow stimulates the spirits?
Well, some of it does. Some of it does, particularly if you're doing an investigation in a place where there's no electricity or a very low amount of electricity or electromagnetic field present.
Well, that makes sense. A lot of them claim that they complain about having their batteries drained the minute they go into a place.
Exactly, because this energy will manifest using whatever energy it can. This is one of the reasons, again, that we get cold spots, is because whenever some energy is trying to manifest, and we're actually helping it, believe it or not, when we do the investigation, or we go in there with this equipment and we go in there with our mind set, hoping to find something paranormal, not necessarily being all skeptical, but being open-minded, we also are basically sending a, I want to say, a psychokinetic invitation to that when we do that, when we go into an investigation.
Wow. Wow,
and
that's
we're
a lot
basically
of information
opening ourselves up.
And so, and also too, how about with the water? Because we, you know, for some reason, water keeps coming up.
Well, water, particularly water of an underground stream nature or a river water or
mm-hmm.
whatever, contains a lot of iron and energy. Energy is produced in the movement and the flow of running water, and places like rivers, streams where there's running water and there's a current. And there's an actual electromagnetic field produced by this. And there's, and of course, the more iron in the water, the more electromagnetic field you're going to have.
I've never thought about that perception of the fact is about the iron in the water. You know, figuring that the fact is that here as humans on this earth, that we rely on having water in our body. Without water, we're basically dead ducks.
Exactly. We're the biggest percentage of our bodies are made up of water.
Absolutely. So the fact is that whether or not, you kind of figure that they need water for, you know, and you want to say for some type of survival, the fact is that now they are energy, but to manifest the energy to actually help them.
Exactly. Water basically is a very conductive thing also. If you ever notice, water is one of the basic conductors for electricity, one of the best conductors for electricity. It basically virtually has very little path of resistance.
So with both you and Tuesday, James, that does paranormal photography, have you found more captured near a water source or pretty much in a unique environment?
Well, near water sources, yes, and something else, near power lines.
That is so
power lines
right,
are producing
huh?
also a constant electromagnetic field.
One
of the best apparition pictures that I've ever gotten, at least the one that my wife got, she took, basically was taken right beneath a bunch of power lines.
Wonderful. One of the guests in our virtual auditorium, James Tallsworth, asked about, what about hot spots?
hot spots as in super heat spots or hot spots as we call them in as the heart of the haunting? It depends on the, you
let's
know,
go
how,
both. Let's go
how
both.
We're using the terminology there.
Okay, he just asked about hot spots, so let's go both.
Okay. If we're using the term hot spot as a place where the energy or the temperature is actually raised instead of drops, then we can use that as a hot spot. Or we also, in the paranormal investigation field, we refer to a hot spot as basically the center of activity or where the most activity is taking place within a particular structure or particular area where the haunting or the alleged paranormal activity is happening.
Now, some might call that as a negative energy when they find hot spots.
Well, hot spots can also be produced by discharge,
okay,
of electrical or electromagnetic energy. And basically, for instance, when let's just say if I were to go into a room and all of a sudden the room temperature increased 10 to 15 degrees.
The temperature
increased? And there was no paranormal activity happening. I would look around to see, basically, if there was some reason, physical reason for that. However, if there's no physical reason for that, I would consider it as a discharge of paranormal activity or psi. In other words, something getting away, something leaving.
Oh, okay. And when it's not so active in the fact it's in that area, then on it, then the readings are going to fluctuate from that.
Exactly. What I have found, I've never run into too many hot spots at all. I've run into a lot of cold spots. Actually, places where the temperature changed, the only time I've experienced that would be, let's say, if I were investigating the part of a downstairs of an active place, and then I went upstairs. Of course, heat rises, and the temperature is going to change up there a little bit.
Certainly, under normal circumstances.
Right, under normal circumstances. But as to a temperature change where it radically changes from a normal temperature to a very hot temperature, I've never experienced that I can recall.
Well, that must be the reason why I'm freezing half of the time. I'll be warm 1 minute, and the next I'm freezing.
Well, I have felt hot spots, too, or the fact is it's actually standing or sitting in a certain area, whether it's my house or someplace else, and felt this immense heat sensation, around me. And, of course, whether it makes you sweat or not, and whether or not it makes you feel uncomfortable. But I have felt that when I have actually felt uncomfortable with it around me and kind of stepped away from it, feeling that, somebody's not in a good mood here.
So, James, tell us about your book, Fear Not the Night.
Okay, Fear Not the Night is basically a novel that I based on some personal experiences that I had when I lived over in the Gulf Coast town of Perry, Florida, a place where I grew up and was raised and a place where I went back to after I retired from the service. We had some very interesting experiences over there. The actual details of the book, which I won't go into, but a little synopsis of the book deals with the spirits of two children that showed up in our house over there. And these two children had been children that I had actually seen die a very long time ago.
So you've actually saw their deaths?
Yes, I actually saw the place, that they were dead. I was one of the people that actually found the little light plane that they and their parents were in.
Oh.
And I believe that they died right there in that crash.
So it's basically, you say, it's taken place in Perry, Florida?
Yes. Of course, I changed the name of the town and the county and the people and the characters so as not to offend anyone. But
certainly, certainly. Now, James, I understand that you're working on a second book. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. I'm working on a book right now called The Switchman.
The Switchman. And can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Well, The Switchman is based on a case that I investigated here about five or six years ago. It was an old railroad depot that was built back in about 1845, and it was later moved to another spot and became a residence. And it acquired quite a reputation as being haunted.
So now this particular rail station, is that in Florida as well?
Yes, that's in a little town called Madison, Florida.
Madison, Florida. Madison,
yes.
Florida. So basically, what is the main theme beyond the rail station? Can you give us a brief synopsis about...
Yes, the book, I'll tell you this, the book is entirely fictional. It's based on the characters that I ran into there, and it's based on, in part, on the investigation that I did and what we found there. However, the story itself is entirely fictional, but is very entertaining, and it does portray a lot of investigative techniques, and it does portray a lot of spiritual activity. One of the spirits that I ran into there was the spirit of a switchman. And I was able to go back and validate and research that there was an actual switchman that lived and worked out of this railway depot.
So is he still, I mean, is he haunting the railroad tracks?
He was basically one of the spirits that we saw.
Cool.
And was able to validate.
Very cool. You know, I want to also to bring up, because we talked about this before, about spirit photography and the pros and cons about it. The fact is that how to debunk a picture that doesn't really have what we think is got maybe something that you've caught on film, versus the fact is that maybe it's improper lighting, maybe the fact is that you moved your camera strap, so on and so forth on that, on it. And so I noticed that, you know, with the spirit photography, we were talking about this earlier a little bit about orbs. When you catch orbs on film, what's your thought about the fact is that on how to really capture an authentic orb or document or even, you know, see that the fact is that is a true orb on film? Do you know what that is?
Yes. Basically, you're going to have certain characteristics with certain types of orbs. First of all, we both know that not all orbs are spirits. There are many kinds of orbs. You can even have balls of electrical energy that show up in orb shape. But the rule of thumb when you're dealing with orbs in a picture to try to validate some information is look closely at the orb. The orbs with the little smiley faces and things like that, mm-hmm. They're not spirit orbs.
Okay,
they're usually things that are seen through the background of the orb. But
okay, so
however, if you see a human face in that orb, which I have seen several,
yes, right.
You're usually dealing with what you would consider a spirit orb. Or another rule of thumb that you can use with orbs is, if they seem to be in any kind of intelligent movement pattern.
Well, describe that a little bit more. Define intelligent movement pattern.
For one thing, if you're taking a picture, and especially if you're taking a picture outside and people see a little, you know, round speck of light going across the picture there, and it looks like, oh, I've got a moving orb. Okay, look at that thing real closely. Blow it up. You may very well be looking at a bug.
It's okay. Not an orb, it's a bug. What about the colorful ones? For instance, I just posted in the room some orbs that I had caught on film in my backyard, and I noticed that in this, I have a very, very blue orb, an orange orb, a yellow orb, a green orb. What are your thoughts on the colors of the orbs?
All right. A lot of that has to do basically with the environment around you.
Okay.
Around you. I have, for one thing, if you ever notice above a tree line after dark, mm-hmm. especially around where you may be on the outskirts of a city or something like that, and you're off in a distance, mm-hmm. you're going to find a glow over the tree line where you see the city lights. Okay? Now, a lot of the reflections off clouds and things like that through those lights in the background is what you're going to see as color in these orbs.
Okay.
Even though it may be looking pitch dark at the angle that you take the picture.
Okay. So I can dismiss the fact is that within this picture I just posted, it, you know, like I said, it's a very bright blue. That, you know, I'm thinking mm-hmm. that, oh, okay, there's a swimming pool two doors down. So that maybe the fact is that this orb caught the blueness of the water there?
It's a very good possibility if the angle of light that was being reflected off clouds or something like that and you know, picked up by the camera when it was taking the picture. But here, let me tell you a little bit about how I discern orbs.
Okay.
Again, this is just me. Many other people do it many other ways.
Okay.
When I look at an orb, I'm going to be very discerning. I'm going to first look for that face, that human face. Not a cartoon character, not a smiley face, not something that looks like Mickey Mouse or anything else. I'm going to look for a human face that looks like you or I.
Okay.
Okay, if I don't see that, then right there I'm going to discount it as a spirit orb.
Okay.
Now, here's some other clues. Are there any other extra ectoplasm around this orb? If the orb is in a cloud of ectoplasm and it's flying around, leaving a contrail, then you usually have a spirit orb trying to manifest.
Cool. I got a couple of those ones.
Okay.
There's my proof. Yay.
All right. Now, as I said, there are many other kinds of orbs. You can have orbs that might even be made up of balls of electromagnetic energy or electrical energy, and sometimes these will show up whenever you take a picture.
Okay.
Okay, those are usually the orbs that usually have the solid type things. You can't see through them. They seem to be more solid
Or the water orbs, what I would call the moisture orbs.
Yeah, moisture orbs, you're going to see they're usually perfectly round, and they'll have a kind of a shiny reflection to them.
Okay, okay. I want to repeat that. It has a shiny reflection to them on the moisture orbs.
Right.
Now, when the orbs are translucent, though, more, where you can actually see through them, what are those?
If there is a little squiggly type outline around the edge of the orb, and it looks like more or less an unfertilized egg that you might see under a microscope.
Yes, right,
it's usually dust.
Okay,
or a spore of some kind.
One of the guests in the virtual auditorium is asking, have you ever seen a black orb?
Yes, I have. I have seen a black orb.
I have too.
As a matter of fact, I photographed one.
I got kind of creepy after photographing a black orb, though, there, Dave.
So did I, but it didn't really strike me as anything but unusual. It didn't really scare me, but I felt a little uneasy about it.
I did, too. I did, too, and really didn't know what to think about it. But the fact is that, you know, I mean, there's that saying goes, without the light, you have your darkness, so... You know, and not putting it into the aspect where we're going to automatically think that it's something evil, something bad, something, you know, I mean, in that aspect of it.
Again, this is an association that we have, that we do with our brain, again.
Okay,
we
good.
Associate the light or the white with good, and we associate the black or the dark colors with evil or something of a less than good nature. However... There's nothing, no evidence to either prove or disprove that a black orb or anything black in color is really bad.
Angela?
Well, you know, Do you believe that because it appears black that it could be lack of, you know, electromagnetic energy field?
It could be, or it could be even something other dimensional that basically is sort of like antimatter in nature.
To look at that, see, look further into that. I wonder, you know, it's funny, the fact is that, you know, not to change the complete subject, though, but just to make this question out there, I'm just wondering if extraterrestrials are, have a way to go into orb shape.
Well, that's a good possibility, too. Orbs have been associated with UFO sightings and with UFO activity. Some of the crop circles, for instance, the places where they have crop circles, orbs are very, very, show a very high presence in those areas.
Okay, on that. We'll have to do more on that because, you know, I wasn't aware of that on it.
Right.
On it. Okay, let's move on that, too. Now, let's see, for instance, the fact is that you get this mist or something abnormal on your film. The fact is that it seems to be that it's taking on shape a little bit. The fact is it doesn't look like smoke, but yet it looks like it's mist on it.
Uh-huh.
Now, how do we know the fact is that whether this is a flaw in the film or the fact is that what could we look around in the picture or maybe even taking more different pictures of it that we can actually identify it as being something abnormal?
Okay, if it's something paranormal, what you're going to usually have to discount around the area that you've taken the picture is, okay, was there any reason for any smoke or any mist to be appearing? Was it very humid that day? Was anybody smoking a cigarette in the near vicinity? Was there any steam coming out of anything? Once you've discounted that, and once you have said no to all those things, and you're looking at this picture and you're seeing something that basically starts to manifest, I would consider it a good chance that it's a spirit trying to manifest. But
okay, that's...
first you have to discount all those other possibilities. And this is, a picture's worth 1,000 words. However, here's the thing right here. The person that took that picture is basically the only one, other than, you know, other witnesses in the vicinity, that can actually say, yes, this happened, or no, this didn't happen, or yes, these conditions existed, or no, they didn't exist. So you have to more or less be there, for one thing.
Right. That's very true. Go ahead, Angela.
Well, James, you know, I know recently that you shared with myself, as well as Tuesday, a video capturing an apparition.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that particular video and why it is so unique?
Okay. This particular video was taken in a hospital in the UK. I'm going to purposely leave the name of the city and the name of the hospital out, because
okay.
A nurse there would probably lose her job if it got out that she was the one that sent this video. My good friend Bill Hind from England, as you know him as Airgun, sent me this picture. A nurse that works in a hospital over there had seen this apparition, and several other people had seen this apparition. And, of course, the government will not allow anybody in there to investigate it, because the British hospitals are all government-run.
Right.
And basically, she took a cell phone into the hospital, and when she saw this apparition, she quickly opened her cell phone cam and filmed about 40 seconds of this apparition. She emailed Airgun the video. It hasn't been touched, and he knew not to alter it any. He did not alter it any. The only thing that's been done to the video itself from the raw video is it was converted into a WMV file so that it could be shown, over computer.
Certainly. Now, tell us, James, why is it that that particular video is considered unique?
Well, this one is considered unique because we ran it through several of the photo programs, including the three-dimensional series that we use on these things to validate photographs. And where there should have been a three-dimensional image raised on the photograph, there was absolutely nothing. It was absolutely flat. Yet in the video, you can see this apparition.
Wow. Well, I know, you know, I saw it and I thought, oh my goodness. Because, you know, I have to tell you, that is the very first video that I have ever seen with an apparition on it. I've seen videos of different sorts of things, and I've seen digital photographs. I myself have an abundance of digital photographs just here in my own home.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But that was the very first that I had seen. Do you find that apparition videos are relatively common, or am I just missing the boat?
They're not that common. That's basically the first one that I've ever seen and been able to validate.
I agree. I feel that there are extremely uncommon for them to be able to, or anybody to capture apparitions on film. You know, for some reason, the fact is that not
right.
only that, the shutter speed that you have to have is, you know, I mean, I would say above 400, 500. The higher you get, the better it is anyways. Because the fact is the same thing is that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're as fast as lightning as is anyways.
Right.
So to capture things on film.
The technology involved there was very, very helpful because a cell phone basically captures a digital image.
Right.
It digitally masters that image as it's recording it, and it does it in real time. So,
yeah,
so
you know, we've been able
to
catch
the advanced technology of our cell phones these days. it's pretty accurate that they'd be able to do that better than, say, with a video camera or a film camera.
Right, and somebody in the virtual auditorium is saying that this could be bugs. You know, you're right, it could be bugs. And the fact is that wherever you're at, and I would say, know your surrounding area when you're taking pictures. Document the fact, is it windy? Is it calm? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it the fact that it's rainy? Is it misty? You want to document the areas that you're taking the photos at.
Exactly. This is why a good investigator will always include the environmental factors in any investigation that they do.
You know, and there's a good point someone's making in here. What is better, the fact is the digital camera or the regular film camera? Proof. You know, that's a very good question, Chrome Angel, on that. Have you noticed too also, Jim, that the fact is that we get better pictures with the digitals?
Well, we get sharper pictures with the digital, and we get a little more dimensional depth. And the good thing about the digital pictures is that you can use different programs with them to test the photographs to see whether what we're seeing is just a shade of light or whether it's an actual dimensional object or whether it's something that is not there on the negative. In other words, you've got instant access to the negative with a digital picture, whereas on film you have basically two-dimensional and you have only the negative to validate it with.
Thank God for technology, isn't that the truth of it? We've been able to catch a lot of things on film.
Exactly.
And save a lot, heck of a lot of money also, too. Angela?
Exactly.
Well, you know, James, I wanted to ask you, when you do your investigations, certainly that is an opportunity, a good opportunity to capture things on film or capture them by digital camera. Do you always take, let's say, a tape recorder or a digital camera or even a video along with your other equipment?
Oh, absolutely. I always take a night shot video camera with me, a low light camera. I take several digital still cameras, and I also take 35 millimeter cameras with me.
So you actually cover all bases then?
exactly if there's anything, if there's anything happening out of the ordinary, and I should be able to capture it on film, it's simply for validation purposes. I'm not looking for proof when I investigate. A lot of people that ghost hunt are looking for proof. They're looking for that golden picture. They're looking for that one that'll give them the 15 minutes of fame or whatever. What I'm looking for when I investigate is simply validation of what I'm investigating.
Okay. So when you're investigating, James, are you the individual then that would, let's say, have some sort of resolution for the family that has paranormal activity going on in their house?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Mm. So how do you resolve that? I mean, are you just saying yes, you definitely have paranormal activity or a poltergeist or this particular spirit? How do you go about resolving this for, let's say, John or Jane Doe?
Okay. What I do is I also... through various people and through the spiritual center, I have a trained group of people, which includes some psychics, which includes some people that deal with spirits. I do deal with some spirits myself. Fortunately, I'm one of the people that has been given the ability to do this.
Good.
Now and again, when it's
spirit guided. So you're the bookkeeper.
More or less.
Okay.
And I do bring these people in when there is a valid reason to do so, and we deal with the situation, and it may take several times dealing with the situation, depending on the methods that are used, and depending on the nature of the particular incidents or paranormal events that are happening. But I have only had basically one case that was unable to be resolved, and that was a case where it was basically somebody needed to be referred to some actual psychological help. What they were experiencing, I believed fully to be...
And they were experiencing what, James?
Medical problem.
Oh, I see. So actually it wasn't paranormal activity.
No,
it was really an abnormal thing going on with the individual.
Exactly.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, listen, you guys, we only have less than a minute left here on it. And so, James, for those, maybe somebody needing your help on it, is we have posted on the website, if you go to the welcome screen, you'll be able to click on where, or you can go under guests, click on the information regarding James, his book also, and an email address is, that you can actually email James for any other information or questions that you have for him. And that's the perfect place to reach you at, James?
Yes. They can reach me at the Grey Ghost email address, greyghost3248@yahoo.com. Or they can reach me through the Shiloh Spiritual Center website, which is, I think, www.shilohspiritualcenter.org, and they will contact me.
Okay, great. Well, you guys, that's the end of our show here on it. Thanks for everybody to tuning in this week. We had wonderful guests this week, James Hatcher, and we also had Dave Schrader from darknessradio.com. Thanks for listening in. Everybody have a blessed week ahead of you, and take care of yourself. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night, Angela.
Good night, Tuesday. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.